Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast. My name's Dan Kennett. We don't have Si this week, I'm afraid. We thought he was going to be in triumphant mode following his epic cup final win with Derby ladies, but sadly not. He's been called in to do some postseason duties. But I do have the other two members of the A-team. First of all, I've got Dr. Bartz. Evening, Bartz.
How are we doing, mate? You all right?
I'm doing pretty well. It was a fun game.
It was fun. Well, it's been a while since we've said that, right?
Yeah, it was fun game. And he's the hardest working man in journalism. It's Mr. Hamza Khalid Luna. Evening, Hamza.
I don't know about that. Paul Joyce is my colleague. I think the accolade belongs to him, but I'll take whatever comes my way.
Nice one. Anyway, we are here to talk about Liverpool 4, Spurs 2. And, before we get into the match itself, we're just going to spend a bit of time trying to just talk about how we feel about this match and how we think we should approach it, as if we were from an analytical perspective. Because I don't know about you guys, but I thought this was a very odd and unusual match right from the press conferences. I mean, right. So I don't know if this translates to overseas listeners, but there's a phrase in Britain called demob happy. And it basically, its origins are in, as in demobilization, as in the military, you come into the end of your tour and then you basically go off on leave for 3 to 6 months and everybody's ecstatic. But in the modern world, it's come to mean when you're coming to the end of a job and you know you're leaving, and then you can kind of just do what you want. And you might, the normal rules of engagement don't apply. And it kind of started in the press conference pre-match where Klopp just basically shooting from the hip, taking down BT Sport and Des Kelly and 12:45 kickoffs and Premier League for letting the English teams down in Europe and everybody. And I just think that whole thing just carried on into the match itself. It was, the whole game was like, everyone was demo happy. I don't know. What did you think, Hamza?
Yeah, I think Klopp's probably been looking forward to this. Or if he's not been looking forward to this specifically, he was at least just very happy to be able to do it for the first time. There are a lot of pressures as any manager, right? But specifically as Liverpool manager, and over 9 years, all those tensions and pressures build up. And you, because of your responsibility as a manager, you just don't get to say what you really feel that often. Sometimes you do, but certain things, when it comes to, for example, broadcasting times or whatever, he can have a bit of a pop, but he can't really just say, yeah, I don't, I'm not going to subscribe or watch TNT Sport, as he said. But because he's off to Germany, he's going to go back home for a bit. He doesn't really care too much. So yeah, it's rare that you get these moments, but I think it's been a sort of long time coming. He's made clear over the past few years his gripes, and I don't think anything here was particularly new. It was
no.
just the reassertment of what we already know, with a bit more extra sort of colour and vim to it.
Yeah, yeah. And so, same thing to you, Bart, because, I mean, essentially this was a dead rubber, right? And we know the title, it was on rocky ground after Palace, it was stone dead after Everton. And, yeah, so it was a different vibe, wasn't it?
It was. I think, I have to be honest, if Klopp wasn't leaving, I think this would have been a very different game. I still think there's a bit about the players who don't want to go out on a whimper. Do you know what I mean? They don't want to lose the next three, because it's Klopp's last three games. They want to try and win as many. But I get what you mean. It wasn't, I think before kickoff was where we were confirmed as third, because Villa got beat, didn't they, at Brighton. So this game literally meant absolutely nothing, apart from the fact that the media can carry on saying, oh, Liverpool could win the title if the top two lose points. So you like,
if they lose every single game left.
They're on course for mid 80 points, and we're nowhere near that. So, you know, give over. But I thought, yeah, I agree. I don't think the players want to lose the next three. I really don't. I think they want to go out as best they can. But it was a weird, I thought that the difference a week makes in terms of recovery. A difference not playing under extreme pressure, like the pressure of Klopp going and the title race are both things that these players will never ever have to comprehend again. They'll have to hopefully comprehend that title race, but not your father figure gaffer leaving after 9 years. So I think you saw a lot in that in the first half, because we can call it a dead rubber, but I didn't think it was a bad performance first 45. I thought we were pretty decent. It looked very much like some of the old Liverpool performances we had, fullbacks high, keeping the ball in the final, you know, all those kind of things that we used to see to do. But I know what you mean. It was interesting. I thought Klopp was smiling throughout as well. But
And the sun was shining. It was really
sun was shining. It was
spring days.
I mean, we let them score two goals as well. We did go out matching. You know?
So like, it's like really weird, because a lot of my timeline, my Twitter timeline was very split between people who were really happy at the performance and people who were really angry. Like, where was this 3 weeks ago? And a lot of people, so it was one of those, I guess that ultimately depends on the type of personality you are, doesn't it, as a fan?
Sure.
But, you know,
there's reasons why it wasn't there 3 weeks ago. And I do think the rest played a big part of it, I have to say. I think they did look fresher. For the first time in a while, we looked like we could do the full throttle thing for a while, for a little bit longer than half an hour.
How much of that is actually playing one of the few teams in the league who are actually more gassed than us?
Yeah, again, but I don't think there's many sides that aren't gassed towards the end of the season. Like, it's like Villa, they got beat at the weekend.
And in Europe.
They're out on legs. They've got a thing to worry about this week.
I would say, I think a lot of that is actually Villa having to play a different goalkeeper than Emi Martinez. Robin Olsen is just... so bad. Anyway, we're not on a Villa podcast.
No, we're not going to go.
He was excellent against Brighton, because that was the match I was at.
Oh, you were at that, weren't you?
He was genuinely man of the match until the Brighton got penalty and the one. But he saved the penalty as well. He was brilliant. But historically, he's not very good.
Yeah, no, he's not very good. In fact, we're going to talk about another not very good goalkeeper in this match, actually. So, but we'll save that. But yeah, it's always a tough one, because I mean, neither of you guys were on when we Gags, I think maybe me, Rhodesy and Si were trying to analyse the games after we won the title. I mean, we kept on doing the podcast after the title. We had to analyse these games where, It was like nothing like you'd watched before. So how can you even discuss this? Yeah. We kept on asking ourselves, what do these numbers mean in this game? Do they mean anything? You know, and I guess we just have to caveat this whole podcast with, you know, it was a dead rubber. Spurs are even more terrible than us, and you know the pressure was off. And anyway,
yeah. Maybe it gives you. Oh, no, I'm not. I was going to say, does it give you a baseline of what it's like? But no, I don't think it does. Like, it's just a day in the sun. We score four goals, and you move on. We can look into it, but yeah.
Anyway, so let's start. Let's do a normal approach. Let's start with those team selections as normal. Those lineups, Hamza.
A few changes that just made it interesting. Alisson was in goal, as you'd expect. Back four from right to left was Trent, Kwanzaa, Van Dijk, Robertson. So the big one there, the noticeable change there was Kwanzaa was back in. And then the midfield three, Endo, Elliot, McAllister. So just in terms of stature, it's not very big. McAllister and Elliot aren't the tallest. And they're not the most physical either. McAllister does make a lot of tackles. But
yes.
as a physical presence, he's not that big. And that, I remember earlier this season, not too long ago, I mentioned when thinking of a midfield composition, I think there's a question of why Gravenberch played instead of Elliot. That might have been against Brentford, perhaps. It wouldn't have been Brentford because we definitely played a big team against Brentford, but it was another team. And I remember I thought it made sense to have Gravenberch in instead just because he's taller. But yeah, this was a more diminutive midfield three. The front three, though, had a bit of hype because Gakpo was playing as a nine, and either side were Diaz and Salah restored to the starting position
after
dropped against West Ham.
And coincidentally, he's playing all 98 minutes, noticeably.
He played very well, too. I think Klopp also mentioned as well that any sort of tension was just water under the bridge, and they know each other now. They've known each other for a long time now, so that was quite easy to straighten out.
Well, yes, absolutely. But you live in London, or near London, anyway. Are you close enough to London to vote in the London mayoral election? Are you within the boundaries or just outside?
No, I'm not there.
Just outside? Outside. But you know a lot of Spurs fans?
I do. We used to have a partnership with Spurs as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They must be pretty damn cheesed off at the moment, right? As an overall club and a fan base, right? Lost four. This is the fourth game in a row that they've lost.
Yeah, I always find Spurs fans a bit like this. Like, we've got half of them now calling for his head. And I'm like, I think they've had a fairly decent season. It doesn't help that Arsenal on the verge of potentially winning the title. That you've always got to put that in the context.
Well, they can redeem themselves by throwing in the towel against Man City.
Well, and that's what, honestly, some of the shouts I've seen of like, who are we going to play at centre half against City? And the fans are like, me.
Doris the tea lady.
Yeah, exactly. So Arsenal don't win the title. And I'm like, wow.
But
they aren't particularly happy. I think start of the season they were... They love to crow a bit, I have to say, and apologies to some of my Spurs liking mates, but after the start they'd had and they'd beaten us, they were like, oh yeah, we're going to be all right this year, best start in years, he's got us going, and I was like, okay, the underlying numbers are not quite right, but they told me to shut up.
So just on Spurs, they were, after 10 games, they were top of the Premier League, they had 1-8, drawn 2, lost none, 26 points out of 30 on Halloween, and since then... They have a minus over the rest of the season. They have a minus 2 goal difference. They've won 10, drawn 4, lost 11. 11th, if you put the PL Premier League table since the 1st of November, they're 11th and they've got 34 points. Yeah. I mean, that's like definition of mid table. But they got top of the league, didn't they? There was an international break. Then they got a bunch of injuries really close together, like Maddison, Adogie, and all that. And then they basically started not doing so well. And then they had they got the cumulative fatigue from having to play players all the time because there was too many injuries. And so in that respect, they just went through their injury spell and then everybody getting gassed a bit sooner than we did, Bart, I think.
Oh, 100%. The issue you've got with Spurs is they're only playing one game a week.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of them don't want to be in Champions League next year because they don't think they've got a squad for it. I think that's mental, by the way, because the money you get from Champions League surely outweighs anything else. But anyway, Yeah, they're worried about the level of the squad difference they've got and whether they can do it, because one game a week and you've been gapped as you are now, you've had this many injuries.
Yeah.
How, as we've seen in Newcastle, Brighton, they've suffered this year because they've had to play two games a week.
Yeah.
And not just your, you know, dog and duck, in the midweek in a League Cup game. It's a proper European.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah.
So I think there is a bit of it there that I think he's done well at Spurs, and the normal Spurs fans would tell you that, but there is a still slight air of caution that there is a bit he's got to learn from managing Celtic, where you can get away with a lot of the weekend, because let's be frank, a lot of the Scottish League is not up to standard, and then you can focus on your midweek game in Europe, shall we say. But Tottenham, you can't do that. Yeah, particularly next season, they're going to be in Europe, aren't they? I think.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to be in some competition, probably Europe League. Yeah. I mean, Hamza, what Bart said there is it kind of leads a little bit into similar to what you said last week about game state when you did your analysis on the pod, because a bit like us, really, is that Spurs haven't had that many games where they've been able to cruise and shut down where they're winning. Whereas if you think about what Postecoglou was used to at Celtic, the games were won after 20, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, and you could basically just, they could just cruise for the last hour, couldn't they? This is a completely different ball game for him as a coach.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, it's been... He always says that he's always learning, and I think this has been not a steep, but a considerable learning experience this season. Just getting to grips with the league and the competitiveness of it. There's a few, like you mentioned, the bad injuries, but I'd also put in as well that Son, he was at the Asia Cup, but it's similar that Salah was at the AFCON as well, and a few of the players are still really good and really young. So Sarr, for example, is excellent, but he's just quite young. Destiny Odogi, he's had a few injuries.
Loads, yeah.
He's also really young as well. So they've got a few players that you expect to just improve over time. Brendan Johnson as well, he's still quite young, and I don't know what type of player he will be, but there's still a good player there. I'm not entirely sure whether he's going to be a wide forward, inside forward, centre forward or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of little things that make it a bit hard to progress in a sort of linear, straight fashion. I mean, if you look at how they were... expectations at the start of the season, where they are now, you'd probably go, yeah, that's good. But given that they started well and then dropped off. Yeah, but to come back to your point about the difference between this and Celtic, I think that's a fair point. Learning how to contest games, learning how to deal with games that are contested over a full 90 minutes.
Especially with regards to playing style and then the squad rotation and squad depth options you've got. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And there were some kind of peculiar comments that Postecoglou made about set pieces. I mean, like one thing about a set piece that is great is if you score one early, then suddenly that makes the whole game a lot easier for you, right? And he says he doesn't really care too much for them. If I'm honest, I don't think he totally believes that. I think he just wants to get people to stop asking questions about his set pieces.
Right.
And I think he probably actually... His emphasis actually is on how his team, he wants his team to play good football first and then also improve the set pieces, rather than put a lot of emphasis on set pieces and play sort of bad football. There's a few things going on there, but I think the general trend is upwards. But it's a bit difficult.
Anyway, I was just spending some time on it because I think there are parallels kind of in the way in terms of the playing style and then the squad and then the injuries that we've gone through. Maybe just that they had a slightly accelerated version of that.
I would say, Dave, I think they remind me a little bit. This might be a bit weird. Villa last season.
Right.
Villa, you could see some of the building blocks, right? And he wanted a certain style and he gave up certain elements of play because he knew he'd developed that over time. And now Villa have got used to playing twice a week, or they're getting used to playing twice a week, and Villa have gone on again this year. Mm. It'll be interesting to see whether the building blocks, as Hamza said, he's got on playing decent football. Let's be frank, Spurs are playing decent football this year. Yes, their subsets, they're not very good at set pieces, but that could be something he works on over the summer, brings in some more players that he wants to do, because you've already spoken about reshaping the squad a little bit. I just think, for me, I think there is a bit of a, I can see where he wants to go. Whether he gets there or not, I don't know. But, yeah.
And lastly, sorry, just as a sort of on what you mentioned, Darth, about the players being gassed. It's interesting. Postecoglou has actually said recently they've actually had too much time off because they've had long gaps between matches, and that just means that they have a lack of rhythm as well. I think so. Both things can be true. Your players can be tired, and they can have a lack of rhythm because there's not enough matches in succession. As we know, Liverpool generally are a team that like rhythm. They like, once they're in that 2-3 game a week mode, the performances begin to sort of assemble and come together, and it becomes very much machine-like, one after the other, tick, 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 tick. When you don't have that rhythm, when you've got, and for example, especially just after an international break, you return, you haven't been together, you've got a match quickly, it becomes harder to gel and keep those patterns between players, not necessarily patterns of play, but patterns where players understand each other, how they're feeling, what they like, those sort of things that help link together and make off-the-cuff movements possible. Those sort of things become a bit harder without rhythm.
Absolutely. So onto the match itself, Bart, do you want to kick us off by just giving us the match summary?
Of course. So as Jurgen said post-game, they had more possession than we did. Which is unusual for us at home. So they had 54.3 and we had 45.7. It would have been really exact. Touches, they had more of the ball, 749 versus 631. Big key stat, which kind of backs up what Jurgen said in a different way. Jurgen basically said that he wasn't bothered about their possession because they didn't have penetration. The field tilt in this game, we had 70%, they had 29%. So that kind of indicates that when we did have the ball, we spent it in their final third, whereas when they had the ball, they spent it in the middle two-third, like defensive third or middle third, not doing a lot with it. We had 25 shots to their 11. We had 12 on target to their 6, so double the amount of shots on target. We had 3 six-yard box shots to their none. Outside the box, 6 apiece. Big chances, 4 versus 3. Goals, 4-2. XG, 3.62 versus 1.24. EPV, we were at 1, they were at 0.94, but we got back up to our level. I've said for the previous games we'd be suffering. We converted our EPV to XG at over 300%, so which is something we hadn't done for the past three games. So that was good to see us get back up to that level, and we limited Tottenham to about 130% conversion. So again, just a couple of things that we got back to doing well, if you get what I mean. We hadn't been doing that very well, I would say, before the Palace game. We just hadn't been doing that. Pass success, a little bit low for us, 83, and they were at 85, which is fairly standard for them. The big change, though, is the half-time split. If you look at first half for us, our field tilt is at 93%. That's why I said the first half was decent. I thought first half we were good. 93% field tilt against the top six side is quite remarkable. Second half, it evens out because we had that horrible poster subs at, 65, 70? So it goes down to about 52-47 in our favour. So, yeah, I think a big story in terms of probabilities, just to finish it off, just because we're there. 3-1 was the most likely score, 11%. And we were very likely to win at 88.9%. And Martin Carlo says we should finish about 81 points. So there you go.
Excellent. So let's kick off with that opening period then, chaps. It was a fun game, right from the start. And there was a lot of it wasn't one of those ones which was like a slow burner. It was pretty high octane stuff, considering both teams are meant to be gassed, or maybe it's all relative. But yeah, it was the what? How did you see that opening period and the patterns of play developing on both sides, Hamza?
I thought the most obvious thing straight away was just the way that our fullbacks were playing.
Talk to me about Trent.
Yeah. As you know, with Tottenham, they play with two inverted fullbacks. They play with them really. And Postecoglou has taken the inverted fullbacks to, and he did this to Celtic. He took it to a new extreme. They're super narrow. And often their narrowness means that the eights actually go wide. But I think if you're looking at this from a tactical perspective, if you're preparing for this match against Spurs and you go, okay, they put their fullbacks inside, you can do two things, right? You can go, they put their fullbacks inside, we'll put ours inside, and we'll try and overload it centrally by putting more and more players in field. Or you go, if they really want to pack out the midfield, sure, okay, we'll just try and target the wings, especially in transition where the fullbacks are inside, to turn over the ball quickly and then hit the wings and attack the number eights if they're covering there, or out to the centre-backs if those are the players there. And Liverpool Klopp decided, yeah, we'll use width instead. We'll use the fullbacks in a conventional attacking manner. Robertson and Alexander-Arnold are going to play as was the plan, I guess, at the start of last season, right? Just attacking high, get towards the box, cross, come in field a bit in the final third. Trent also, in first phase, was dropping deep and instigating play, but he was also getting around the outside, offering width, playing switches as well, switch for the third goal, fourth goal. Doesn't matter too much, but there's a sequence where there are three switches before the goal. The Salah goal. As well, so I mentioned earlier that Gakpo was a nine, but there are periods within the game where he swapped with Diaz and moved left. If you look at his average touches are actually outside the central portion of the pitch and more in the left half space. Diaz were also there, and sometimes Elliot would pop in as like a double 10. Sometimes McAllister would as well. So it was different spatial occupations at different times. But Gakpo was peeling to the left, and I think we saw some of the benefits of that because that's a more conventional position for him. That's where he sort of played the PSV, but at different times he moved infield as well. Elliot was playing as an eight, but again, getting higher. And when he went higher, sometimes Salah would drop to play as you may expect, like an eight in the half, in the right half space to be able to pass. So there were a few rotations going on that worked out quite nicely. I mean, even at one point, McAllister played as like the double 10 or like force nine.
Yeah.
Not taking up those positions, not playing as, if you understand what I mean. But yeah, so there were a few different things that Liverpool did. And in the first half, they worked a real treat. But I think the most striking one and the most obvious one to start with is the fullbacks and the way that they played in a more conventional way.
Yeah, so we always say that the Premier League is a copycat league. It's a video league, Hamza. And we aren't the first team to do this against Spurs in recent times and just basically defend in quite a narrow shape. We don't almost like say, OK, we'll leave the flanks open. Have them if you want. You can attack there. But we'll just stay in the middle because they've seen Spurs struggle to build through the middle when the middle is congested. And, you know, and it's fair to say that for the first hour until the subs were made, we were comfortably on top tactically, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
We were playing the game that we wanted, and Spurs were playing the game they least wanted to, basically.
Yeah. Liverpool, as Bart's mentioned with the field tilt stats, Liverpool were encamped in the final third for the first period of the game, and that's great because for two reasons. One, just, well, actually a few reasons. Tactically, it means you're close to the opposition goal, you can circulate the ball. If lots of players are there, that means you can counter press easily because if you're well positioned, all your players are in close proximity. So if the ball is turned over, you can suddenly rush in and stop them counter-attacking you, and then you can turn that into a shooting chance for yourself. It also meant that we weren't being stretched as much in open play, and that saves on players' legs. It's easier to deal with, and tactically it's easier to defend as well. So you can look at Liverpool last season and you see that when the spacing isn't quite right and you're not encamped in the opposition defensive third, then the game becomes a lot more open. And if they're able to play long balls in behind, some of your defenders are having to turn and try and trap those balls and win those. And that leaves more strain on the number six, who's trying to cover that space between defensive line and forward line. It gives them counter-attacking opportunities. It's the sort of stuff that Manchester United are dealing with all season because they play too vertically and can't cover the space in between. That essentially, just being able to keep them in that space is a dream. You're able to control the game, play with speed, and create lots of chances.
And it's also fair to say that Emerson Royale is not a very good player. He's got to be one of the worst fullbacks in the Premier League, right?
He's the reserve fullback, so you wouldn't expect too much from him. Udoga is injured. Right. I think most people that watch the Premier League probably know he's probably not the best. But yeah,
you're very generous there, Hamza. That's a good. It's an very fair journalistic assessment. I'm just saying he's one of the worst in the league. Yeah, but yeah, talk to me again. Build on what Hamza's been saying there, and bring in your data observations, please.
I was going to say, first off, Passback pretty much backs up what Hamza has been saying. Although we were average positions, we were playing within the width of the 18-yard box.
Yeah, talk to me about Trent's average position in that first half.
Yeah, but the good thing about that is him and Robert are almost sort of level with each other, which is nice. We haven't seen that for a year, for a while. And also, we had a player in each of the half space in zone 14. Yes, average position-wise, that was, I think that's 19's Cody, isn't it? Harvey. So that was good movement around. Also like the fact that there's, I love triangles, right? So there's a big triangle between your two centre halves and your six. You then got triangles between your six and your two fullbacks and linking again with each other. So I think it just was a bit of a throwback. You've also got, because of a lot of duels that we win as well, we've won all our duels in the central area in that first half, which again comes back to your point, Darf, about we weren't letting them play in that middle area. It was like, go on, you try and play there, but we'll win the ball. And then we'll flick it out wide and you won't handle us out there. The number of switches we did in that first half, I thought was a massive throwback to the days gone by where that's just used to be, Trent to Robbo, Robbo back across, Trent would pick up the game, put it back in again. It was just happening all the time. It just, first time in a while, it felt like goals were coming. I don't know, that's a real, that's not a tactical, a data thing, but it did feel, I just haven't felt that pressure for a while. If you look at also when I've done the half space zone 14s by time period as well, that 31 to 45, which is when we really do crank up the pressure, should we say, really keep it in their half, we have got multiple passes coming in and out of both half spaces and zone 14. And it gets progressively better through the half, but that period, 31 and just before, and then up to half time, we've got at least six passes going in and out of both half spaces and zone 14, which is a real indication that we kept the ball, penned them in, and we scored both goals in that period of time. I can't remember now, but definitely the Robbo one. We had another couple of big chances that we probably should have done better with. But I thought Cody dropping out to that left was really interesting. Yeah. Look at the touch match to the players. We're basically not playing with annoying. There's no touch indication. Where's the touch map for us? Yeah, there's no real nine playing in the touch area in the nine area, because Cody's and Diaz's areas are both overlapping. Max over that side. You've basically got Harvey taking up the most of the possession in that nine, where you would expect our nine to be. But that worked well for him. He was taking up positions. He was probing. He was pressing. So he was doing well. But I thought it was generally an interesting performance. And again, the zone map for our team for the first sort of up to first subs is around the centre area. So it's picking players around that.
So let's finish the Trent chat now. Let's do all the Trent chat now. Because he was most prominent in that first half an hour or so. Mm-hmm. He's only just come back. He's made a big impact in all the games. He's come back from an injury. He's been out for the best part 3.5 months, I think it was, and he's gradually working his way back up to fitness. But I thought he was incredibly dangerous in that first half an hour in this game. And when you can see Trent's average position is going to be in the right attacking half space, I mean, that's quite something, really, isn't it, Bart?
Oh, 100%. We've always said you want your best players to be in those areas. Yeah, and Trent being in that area and still having the ability to go off for the width as well,
Yeah.
So we basically meant we had Mo or him in that right half space.
And to be fair, Harvey played a lot. Harvey's average position in that first half was a 10, but he did also pull out wide to the touchline on quite a few. So there was rotation between the three players, right?
Yeah. As Hamza said, we had spatial awareness between our three players, which meant that we always had a player in each of the three key areas. So the three channels, we had zone 14, we had the half space, and we had the wide channel always covered by probably three of our best on-ball players on the day. Mac was having a more...
Left center. He was on the left, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it wasn't as prominent, should we say, as previous games, but those three made sure that each of those channels were covered and there was an option for us to move the ball into those areas. And that really helped us. And then Robbo held the width on the left, so he had the left channel, which meant that Cody or Diaz was in the left half space channel. It all moved around well as a sequence, should we say.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.